Go ahead then, we'll summarize what's been going on. Well, we're getting a little early start. Usually we sit here and chat for a while about various odds and ends, right? Nobody has any stories to tell or anything?
I broke a really nice saucer that my mother from years back.
Oh, no.
Yeah,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, that's hard when those kind of memories get broken like that. Mm-hmm. We like to tease Ethan because when Kim and I got married, Kim had a collection of bells that her mom had made throughout the years, and Ethan did all of those in his first year. That's just, yeah. Eldon, he's not here tonight, so I can say that.
And it's an antique, of course. But anyway, her grandmother on one side of the family broke the bottom. And the grandmother on the other side of the family broke the hen that goes on top. My mother found out about it, so she asked if she could have the bottom.
Uh-huh.
She asked the other grandma if she had the top. And then so she got a complete set.
Hey, that's the way to do it.
Did it lay glass eggs?
No comment.
No comment. There's a Bugs Bunny cartoon from World War II era. It shows, I don't know, it's just commentary on life at the time, and this guy goes out to his hen house and he picks up the hen, and he kind of looks down at the eggs. They're all shiny and metallic looking, and he picks one up, and it says something like grade A aluminum on it. And the hen says, I'm doing my part, laying aluminum eggs for the war effort. It's been a long time since the country's asked us to do things like that and have scrap metal drives and rubber drives and all that, aluminum drives. Okay, well, let's go ahead and get to our text then. We are in 2 Kings chapter 15. We were looking at the life of an interesting king in the Old Testament. His name was Uzziah. And so, Abby, tell me something interesting about Uzziah. Right, yes. Other books of the Bible mention Uzziah. Books like Isaiah chapter 1 says that Isaiah prophesied in the reigns of Uzziah and Jotham and Ahaz and Jeroboam. And so that helps us pinpoint that Isaiah was writing in this time that we're looking at here of Uzziah's life. Also the book of Amos and the book of Hosea were written right about this time. So we are definitely in the period of the writing prophets. God is working through his people. He's bringing scripture to life as his prophets write it down. And so not only are we getting the history of Israel, we're also getting God's commentary on the history of Israel as we go through these things. So Uzziah is the king of the south. And Daniel, tell me something else interesting about Uzziah. Yes, he had people design very cool machines. What could those machines do?
They're ballistas, so they take out heavy machines.
Right, they could shoot giant arrows and throw rocks from the towers of Jerusalem to take out siege equipment. So Uzziah had some interesting things going on in his rule, had engineers working for him. He was an agriculturalist. He had many, many farms planted throughout Israel. He helped the soil grow a lot of produce for the nation. He kept large herds of cattle and livestock. He dug wells all throughout the desert areas of southern Judah. really, really improved the land through his public works. How long did he rule? Anybody remember that?
40 years.
A little higher. 52 years. He had a very long reign, 52 years. And so he starts when he's 16 years old, right here at 810 B.C. Eldon.
I got to say, I saw pictures of those weapons in the encyclopedia.
Did you? Yeah, yep. Pretty neat to see that stuff come to life, and that the Bible's history is an accurate and realistic history. It's not just made up stories. These things actually went on. Yeah, probably. Yeah, actually, one of the kings of the north here, we're going to see a patent violation coming up very soon, but we'll get to that in its time. Who is ruling the northern kingdom at the same time Uzziah is ruling in the south?
Jeroboam
the second, right. So we have this period of rapid expansion under Jeroboam and Uzziah. Israel is able to expand her borders far, just about to the same place that Solomon had them way back when the kingdom was a great empire. And so it's expanded to those things, but what else interesting happened to Uzziah toward the end of his reign? Eldon.
He made a sacrifice in the temple that he wasn't supposed to do.
Right. He tried to go into the holy place and offer the incense offering that only the priests were allowed to do. And so how did God discipline Uzziah?
Leprosy.
He struck him with leprosy. So, implications of being a leper now. Well, if you're leprous, what do you have to do?
Not
go in the temple, definitely. So he is now, for the rest of his life, excluded from temple worship.
You got
to live away from other people. So it even tells us he went and lived in a house separately by himself for the rest of his life so that he wouldn't infect anyone else with leprosy. So, if the king is isolated in his house, who rules the country? His son, right. And his son does step up and take the reins. But since Uzziah outlives or outrules several of the kings of the north, especially Jeroboam, the writer of our history is now going to transition to go back to the north. So he, in verses 1 through 7, he described for us the rule of Uzziah in the southern kingdom. And we saw that the book of Chronicles actually gives us a lot more detailed information about Uzziah than the book of Kings does. But now, in verse 8, we're going to transition back to the north. And in the north, Jeroboam is sitting on the throne. Now, Jeroboam is whose grandson? Ooh, now I'm stretching your memories, right? Nope. No, not quite. Jehu. Yeah, all these guys named Jay. Why do they do that? Well, it's not as bad as France where you have King Louis the 304th or whatever they're on now. Boy, pick a different name so we know where you're at. But Jeroboam is the grandson of a man named Jehu. So Jeroboam's father was Joash. Joash's, you know what? I was wrong. I'm sorry. He's the great-grandson of Jehu, Jehoaz. And then we get back to Jehu. What did Jehu do?
Wiped out all of Ahab's
house. Right. Jehu was God's instrument of judgment on the house of Ahab. So Ahab was a wicked king in the north. God pronounced the judgment upon him that his dynasty and his household would be completely wiped out, and God used Jehu to accomplish that. Because he did that, what did God tell him? How long would Jehu's dynasty last? To the fourth generation, right? It says the fourth generations of your son will sit on the throne. So that's four generations after Jehu are going to sit on the throne of Israel. Well, Jehu, and then Jehoaz is the first, Jehoash is the second, Jeroboam is the third. What does that leave us? Uh-oh. What does that tell you about Jeroboam's son? He's going to be the last of Jehu's dynasty. And that's where we come to in verse 8. In the 38th year of Azariah. Wait, let me back up. I'm sorry. Go back to chapter 14, verse 29, the last verse in chapter 14. And it says, Jeroboam slept with his fathers, the kings of Israel, and Zechariah, his son, reigned in his place. So there we have the very typical statement that Jeroboam's life came to an end and his son Zechariah takes the throne in his place. Now, we jump down to verse 8 of chapter 15, where it picks up with Zechariah's rule. And it says, in the 38th year of Azariah, king of Judah, Zechariah, the son of Jeroboam, reigned over Israel in Samaria 6 months. Yeah, short rule, huh? Doesn't that tell you something weird's going on here? But now let's think about some of the timing of things. If you remember, we had some issues with when did Jeroboam take the throne, because some of the numbers, I don't want to say don't seem to line up, but we appear to be missing some information to put everything together. Because Uzziah is said to take the throne in the 27th year of Jeroboam. We said probably a good solution is that Jeroboam actually had a co-rex or pro-rex relationship with his dad and actually took the throne way back here. But since his dad was still alive, that time gets accounted to Joash, not to Jeroboam. But Jeroboam rules for, let's see if we can find this. Let's go back to chapter 14, verse 23. We're going to be jumping around a little bit. We got to keep some numbers in our head as we try to do this. The 15th year of Amaziah, the son of Joash, the king of Judah, Jeroboam, the son of Joash, king of Israel, began to reign in Samaria. And he reigns for 41 years. 41 years. Now, Jeroboam takes the throne during the reign of Amaziah of Judah. And it's in the 15th year. All right? You can see by the timeline here that Amaziah rules for 29 years. So that means that Uzziah takes the throne here in the 15th year of Jeroboam. Jeroboam rules for 41 years. So how many years are left of Jeroboam's rule after Uzziah takes the throne? So 41 minus 15, you come up with 26. Yeah, 26. So we should see on our timeline that Jeroboam dies in the 26th year of Uzziah, and that's right when he does. 26 years, 26th year of Uzziah is when Jeroboam should be passing off the scene. But look at chapter 15, verse 8. In what year does Azariah the king, what year of Uzziah does Zechariah take the throne? The 38th. Now wait a second, we are 12 years off. 12 years off. So, once again, do we have a problem with the biblical text? No. You just say no, or you got an explanation for me? Okay, can't be a problem with the biblical text. All right. Once again, this is not a place where we have any textual evidence that there's a problem. The number does read the 38th year. How is it that Zechariah can take the throne in the 38th year when his dad died in the 26th year? Well, it'd be 12 years. They're looking for somebody? What do you mean looking for somebody? They trying to figure out who's going to be king? So you're saying there could have been a period of severe civil unrest in the northern kingdom. Something like that. Okay. That actually could be a very good description, that there was what we call an interregnum, meaning there was no king in the north for some reason for 12 years. I want you to look at verse 8 again, and we're going to compare it to the other statements of when a king took the throne. So we have to pay attention pretty carefully to the wording that happens here. In the 38th year of Azariah, king of Judah, Zechariah, the son of Jeroboam, reigned over Israel in Samaria 6 months. So now keep that wording in your head, and let's go back to chapter 15, verse 1. In the 27th year of Jeroboam, king of Israel, Azariah, son of Amaziah, king of Judah, began to reign. Do you notice any differences? What's different about the two statements? Okay, you're on the right track. Yeah, the standard formula is state the name of the king, or say, I'm sorry, first of all, state the year of the other kingdom, then state his name, and then state how long he reigned, or something like that. What gets thrown off in verse 8 is that we don't have a statement that he began to reign. It simply says that in the 38th year of Uzziah, Zechariah reigned 6 months. It doesn't say that he began to reign in the 38th year, does it? So if you go back to chapter 14, verse 29, Jeroboam slept with his fathers, the kings of Israel, and Zechariah, his son, reigned in his place. So that's a pretty standard formulaic expression. So based on that, we would assume that Zechariah took the throne when? Right when his father died, right? Pretty normally, and that's normally what happened. So, does verse 8 tell us anything about when he began to reign?
6 months into the reign of King Azariah?
Well, no, because it says, in the 38th year of Uzziah, he reigned over Israel 6 months. But it doesn't use the wording that says he began to reign then, does it? It simply tells us that in Uzziah's 38th year, Zechariah ruled for 6 months. So here are a couple of scenarios that could fit the biblical data. Number one, as we've already suggested, there was an interregnum. There was no king in the north, or there was a period of such unrest after Jeroboam died that they couldn't stabilize things for 12 years. And then they finally get Zechariah to sit on the throne for 6 months. That's one possible explanation. The other possible explanation is that Zechariah took the throne when his father died, and it lasted 6 months into Uzziah's 38th year. I think that's probably the correct understanding of it. Again, because chapter 14, verse 29 tells us that when Jeroboam died, his son took the throne. That's the pretty standard formula for a succession of kings. So I think what's happening here is simply that the writer of Kings is going to almost completely gloss over Zechariah's reign. Either Zechariah didn't accomplish much of anything, his reign was insignificant in the scheme of things, or what have you, but he's simply going to tell us that it lasted into the 6th month. Of Uzziah's reign. So, Uzziah's 38... I lost my computer. Doesn't that figure? At any rate. Well, we can kind of... Boy, if I had just scrolled over a few inches to the right there, we could have seen everything. But at any rate, what I think is going on here is that Jeroboam dies in Uzziah's 26th year. His son Zechariah takes the throne, and for 12 years he is on the throne. Uzziah's 38th year begins, and Zechariah's overlaps that by only 6 months. And so let's read a little bit about Zechariah and what he does. Zechariah reigned over Israel in Samaria for 6 months, and he did what was evil in the sight of the Lord as his fathers had done. He did not depart from the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, which he made Israel to sin. So what's the sin of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat? Idols. Which ones specifically? The golden calves at Dan and Bethel, right. So that has continued on since the beginning of the kingdom of Israel. It's gone on about 200 years now. And he has continued those things. So, after these 6 months, verse 10, Shalom, the son of Jabesh, conspired against him and struck him down at Ibleam and put him to death and reigned in his place. Now the rest of the deeds of Zechariah, behold, they are written in the book of the Chronicles of the Kings of Israel. That's not the book of Chronicles, by the way. It's a different book. Wouldn't it be interesting to have that? Yeah. Yeah. Well, apparently, though, that was not an inspired part of Scripture, or we would have it. And what God wanted us to know, we have. So we know that Zechariah, after this six-month period in the life of Uzziah, he's assassinated. There's a coup raised up against him, and he's killed. And that's, according to verse 12, this was the promise of the Lord that he gave to Jehu, your son shall sit on the throne of Israel to the fourth generation. And so it came to pass. God has once again fulfilled his promise exactly as he gave it. He told Jeroboam, your sons will sit on the throne to the fourth generation. And here we are in the fourth generation, and that's it. They're done. God has raised up another person. Jehu's dynasty is done. So how many dynasties have we been through in the northern kingdom now? Let's recap. The northern kingdom started with who? What was the king of the northern kingdom, the first one? Jeroboam, the son of Nebat. Now remember, don't confuse him with Jeroboam the second. Okay, Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, started the northern kingdom. His son Nadab took the throne, but then his son Nadab was assassinated by Baasha. Baasha took the throne. And Baasha's son Elah took the throne. And then Elah was assassinated by a man named Tibni. Tibni and Omri had a period of civil war. Finally, Omri is able to secure the nation, and so Omri rules. And Omri's son Ahab took the throne. Ahab's son Ahaziah then ruled after him, and his brother Joram then took the throne. And that's when God raised up Jehu, who wiped out the house of Ahab, and then Jehu ruled for 28 years. Jehu's son Jehoahaz ruled for 17. Jehoahaz's son Joash ruled for 16, and then Jeroboam takes the throne for 41. And so now here we are. We have the end of Jehu's dynasty right here in the 38th year of Uzziah. So, why would it be important to mark that 38th year of Uzziah? Because this is the time God fulfills his prophecy against Jehu's dynasty. And so he brings to an end Jehu's dynasty, just as he promised. Now, we're going to see a rapid succession of separate dynasties happen here. We've already seen several of them. I forgot to count as we were going through all that. Real quick back through. Jeroboam is one, Baasha's two, Tibni's three, Omri's the fourth, Jehu is the fifth. So we've just seen the end of the fifth dynasty of the northern kingdom in just over 200 years. Now, how many dynasties have we seen in the southern kingdom? One. Whose dynasty? David's dynasty is still sitting on the throne of Judah. We had a little trouble there with Athaliah, but even while Athaliah was ruling, there was still a king who could sit on the throne. Little Joash. So, what kind of effect does it have when there is this much trouble in government, when there's not a clear transition of power? What happens? Economic problems, yep. Yes, you get all kinds of problems when there's not a clear and easy succession of power from one ruler to the next. You have lots and lots of problems. Economic problems, military problems, and political problems. And that's what we're going to see is going on here. So Zechariah ends Jehu's dynasty, and now things are going to get a little bit crazy in the north. So let's continue on, verse 13. Shalom, that's the man who assassinated Zechariah. Shalom, the son of Jabesh, began to reign in the 39th year of Uzziah, king of Judah. and he reigned 1 month in Samaria. 1 month. Not the greatest length of time, is it? He reigned 1 month in Samaria. Then Menahem, the son of Gadi, came up from Tirzah and came to Samaria. And he struck down Shalom, the son of Jabesh, in Samaria, put him to death, and reigned in his place. Now, tell me what you think might be going on here. Shalom assassinates Zechariah, takes the throne, and a month later, somebody else comes up and kills Shalom. What's that? Yeah, look, when one dynasty passes off the scene, there's going to be a lot of fighting for that crown, isn't there? And so it could be that Menahem was a general in the army. It could have been that he was just a man of great prestige and power. But for one reason or the other, now that they see that Jehu's dynasty is done, there's no more clear succession, all of these people are going to start throwing their hats into the ring trying to take control of things. And so Menahem comes up. He assassinates Shalom. And verse 15, now the rest of the deeds of Shalom and the conspiracy that he made, behold, they are written in the books of the Chronicles of the Kings of Israel. At that time, Menahem sacked Tipsah and all who were in it and its territory from Tirzah on, because they did not open it to him. So what is Tirzah doing? What does it mean they would not open it to him? Didn't want him in the city. Why do you think they didn't want him in the city? It could be either they're supporters of Shalom or some other faction, but for one reason or another, they really are not accepting Menahem as the rightful king. So once he's got power established, he takes the military down and he sacks the city. But look at what else he does. Therefore, he sacked it and he ripped open all the women in it who were pregnant. Effectively, of course, killing off the next generation of people. Probably it's a good chance the moms died in this too. Some of them might have survived it. But he goes down to the city and rips open all the women and kills all those unborn children. Okay. Why would you do that? Because you're a cruel, sadistic person. Yeah. Yeah, this is pretty vengeful, isn't it? This is Menahem taking revenge on a city that wouldn't accept him as the king. Well, how's that going to make the rest of your subjects feel about you?
Down with the king.
It might make them rebel. What else might it make them do?
Fear.
Yeah, that might make them afraid to try anything against you if they know this is going to be the result. Well, in the verse 17, in the 39th year of Azariah, king of Judah, Menahem, the son of Gadi, began to reign over Israel, and he reigned 10 years in Samaria. So he actually has a fairly lengthy rule. He did what was evil in the sight of the Lord. He did not depart all his days from the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, which he made Israel to sin. So even though we're changing dynasties in the northern kingdom, we're not letting go of this traditional sin of the northern kingdom. Why do you think all of these kings hang on to this thing?
Commerce,
could be. Mm-hmm. There is often a lot of commerce associated with religious practice, especially in the ancient world. Because what do you give to a god to appease him?
Sacrifice.
Sacrifice. Sometimes that sacrifice is in the form of gold, right? Silver, precious stones. So, yeah, where there are temples, there are generally lots of income. And so Menahem keeps that. Why else might he be keeping this traditional idolatry?
Wasn't it to keep people up in the northern kingdom?
A big part of it was to keep them in the northern kingdom so they wouldn't travel down to the southern kingdom. So you've just taken over a new country. That's a lot of instability, right? You're trying to secure your foothold on the throne. Would changing the national religion throw that into question? Possibly could, couldn't it? So some of this is probably a political calculation on these kings' parts to say, well, we don't want to change things in the country too much. And so they maintain it. But something else starts to happen in verse 19 in the history of Israel. Pul, the king of which country? Assyria. Now, which biblical prophet went to Assyria? Jonah did. Now, remember, Jonah prophesied in the... I'm going to go find him here. There he is. Jonah prophesied right at the beginning of the reign of Jeroboam. And we said that one of the reasons in the world around Israel, one of the reasons that Jeroboam and Uzziah were able to expand Israel's borders was because Assyria went through a period of... They stopped expanding. They stopped their aggressive tactics. There is a really good chance that it's because of the ministry of Jonah, where he went and preached God's judgment. They repented. They turned from their wickedness. And so for a generation, they stopped their wickedness and their expansion. But now, guess what? There's a new king in Assyria. And his name is Pul. And... where'd he go? There we go. His name is Pul. So Assyria is now expanding again, and they have come down to Israel. So Pul, the king of Assyria, came against the land. You're Menahem. You've taken control of this kingdom of Israel by assassinating the previous king, who in turn assassinated the previous king before that. How do you cement your rule when this big dog country, Assyria, is knocking at your door with a massive army? You surrender? You hope to become a vassal king. So Menahem, yeah, he realizes there is no chance that he's going to be able to militarily defeat Assyria at this point. Despite how large Israel has gotten, he knows he doesn't stand a chance against Assyria's army. So he does exactly that, Daniel. He gave Pul, we're back in verse 19, he gave Pul 1,000 talents of silver so that he might help him to confirm his hold on royal power. So rather than having the northern kingdom destroyed, Menahem gets to claim credit for saving it. But how does he do it? 1,000 talents of silver. Now, how much money is 1,000 talents of silver? A lot. So a talent is about 75 pounds. So we have 75 pounds of silver. You can get your calculators out. We'll do some quick reckoning. So Daniel, go ahead and multiply 75 pounds times 16 ounces. You got that? Tim, you got a calculator on your computer back there, don't you?
75 pounds times 16 ounces?
Yep. How much is that?
1,200.
So that's 1,200 ounces of silver per talent. And he gave him how many talents?
1,000.
1,000 of them. So Tim, multiply that by 1,000. So that should be 1.2 million ounces of silver, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And, what's the going rate of silver right now? I forgot to check today. Is it about $13 an ounce? Okay, so multiply that by 13, Tim. So what are we up to? About 14 and a half million?
15,600,000.
Oh, $15.5 million he's going to pay Assyria. Now, of course, that's back then. That's a lot of money. Where do you get this kind of money? From the temple? That's often where they got it. Look at where Menahem gets it. Menahem exacted the money, verse 20. Menahem exacted the money from Israel, that is, from all the wealthy men, 50 shekels of silver from every man to give to the king of Syria. So the king of Assyria turned back and did not stay there in the land. 50 shekels of silver. What was the average daily wage for a common laborer? About a shekel. Okay, so this translates to roughly 2 months of wages from every man in Israel. So you can do a little bit of math and say, you know, the average salary, this is a pretty hefty levy. that Menahem takes from his people in order to raise this money to pay off the king of Assyria. Now, you could say, well, hey, we had to do it, right? I mean, paying $15 million is better than having our nation wiped out, right? Would you rather completely lose your nation or just lose everything you own? Well, Menahem makes that calculation. And so he exacts this levy from everybody. So the king of Assyria leaves them alone, content to have reduced Israel to a state of vassalage. Verse 21, now the rest of the deeds of Menahem and all that he did, are they not written in the books of the chronicles of the kings of Israel? And Menahem slept with his fathers, and Pekahiah, his son, reigned in his place. So Jeroboam II of Israel raises Israel to this place of military might. He expands the borders. He becomes a nation to whom other countries are sending tribute. And now Zechariah, his son, is killed. Shalom is killed. Menahem's on the throne. And where's Israel?
Vassalage.
Now they're in vassalage. They're now servants to Assyria. Things have started declining, and they are going to decline fast. If you notice, the end of Menahem's reign tallies up to be about the year 761 BC. We are very quickly now approaching a very important date. Burn it into your minds, 722 BC. That's the year the northern kingdom falls. It's the year the northern kingdom is completely wiped away by the king of Assyria. So we are just 40 years before the destruction of the northern kingdom. Menahem has staved it off just a little bit by paying this huge amount of money, but it will not last forever. So, Menahem's son, verse 23, in the 50th year of Azariah. Now, we're still in the rule of King Uzziah of the south. Azariah is his name, Uzziah. Because he reigned for how many years, Hannah? Yeah, 52 years. So we're getting close to the end of his reign, right? But we're just a couple of years before it. So, in the 50th year of Azariah, king of Judah, Pekahiah, the son of Menahem, began to reign over Israel and Samaria, and he reigns for 2 years. So these are all nice short rules, right? Zechariah, we've got that 6-month period, Shalom 1 month, Menahem's 10 years, which is a little better, but now Pekahiah is only going to rule for 2 years. He did what was evil in the sight of the Lord. He did not turn away from the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, which he made Israel to sin. Guess what's going to happen to Pekahiah? I'll give you 3 guesses, and the first 2 don't count. He's going to be assassinated, right. Verse 25, Pekah, the son of Remaliah, his captain, conspired against him with 50 men of the people of Gilead, and struck him down in Samaria in the citadel of the king's house with Argob and Ariah. He put him to death and reigned in his place. Now the rest of the deeds of Pekahiah and all that he did, behold, they are written in the book of the Chronicles of the Kings of Israel. So, Menahem's dynasty lasts how long? 2 generations, a mere 12 years, and it's gone. So this puts us in now the 8th dynasty of the northern kingdom. So Pekah has taken the rule. Now, you might remember Pekah, the son of Remaliah. He's going to play a very important part in the life of a famous king, Ahaz. I'll get there when we get there. Don't let me get ahead of myself, okay? But we're going to read about him in the book of Isaiah. He's written about. Does anybody remember the story of the Assyrian army that gets wiped out by the angel of the Lord? That's what's coming up. Assyria is going to come down to attack Samaria, and the kings are going to be very distraught about it, but Isaiah is going to tell them, don't worry, it'll all be okay. So we'll get to that story here pretty soon. I'm getting ahead of myself at any rate. So here we are, Pekah, the son of Remaliah, is on the throne. So we're going to cover him, and then we'll pause and go back to the southern kingdom next week. Verse 27, so in the 52nd year of Azariah, king of Judah, how long did Azariah rule? 52 years. So here we are in the same year that Azariah is going to finish up. In the 52nd year of Azariah, the king of Judah, Pekah, the son of Remaliah, began to reign over Israel in Samaria, and he reigned 20 years. He did what was evil in the sight of the Lord. He did not depart from the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, which he made Israel to sin. In the days of Pekah, king of Israel, Tiglath-Pileser, king of Syria, came and captured Ijon, Abel-Beth-Maacah, Janoah, Kadesh, Hazor, Gilead, and Galilee, all the land of Naphtali, and he carried the people captive to Assyria. This is a huge event. I'm going to try to bring up my map module so we can take a look at this. Because when we compare what Jeroboam was able to do in expanding the nation to what happens here, we're going to see just how dire the circumstances have become and how quickly they have come to the place they are. Because under Jeroboam, things expanded rapidly, and we said that Jeroboam was actually able to expand the borders of Israel all the way into Syria and take over Syria. So, Assyria, I don't want to zoom out just yet. Assyria is way up here off the map. It's up in this corner. Syria is everything north of this area. This is the land of Galilee. That's the Sea of Galilee. So when it says Tiglath-Pileser came in and conquered Galilee, Naphtali is all of this area down here. And some of these other names that are mentioned are all cities. Gilead is this land over this way. Remember, we've talked about Ramoth-Gilead is a city right over here on this river, but this is the land of Gilead. So the Assyrians have come down. They've taken away all of this. They've taken away all of this area around the Sea of Galilee, and they have deported those people to Assyria. That only leaves this little tiny section of the hill lands of Ephraim remaining. Assyria has already taken a big portion of Israel into captivity. Well, if you were the people of Israel and your king let this happen, how would you feel about it? Not very good. How do you think Pekah, the son of Remaliah, is going to wind up? Dan says dead, right? He's going to wind up dead. Yep, verse 30, then Hoshea, the son of Elah, made a conspiracy against Pekah, the son of Remaliah, struck him down and put him to death and reigned in his place in the 20th year of Jotham, the son of Uzziah. Now the rest of the acts of Pekah and all that he did, behold, they are written in the books of the Chronicles of the kings of Israel. So we have brought ourselves, this one mentions the reign of Jotham, but he's going to describe the reign of Jotham later on. So, things are moving along. We have covered 20, 30, we've covered about 40-some years of history, but look at how quickly everything is declining. This is really only one generation of people, even though it's been four kings. We've covered one generation. Imagine seeing that kind of change in your country. It would kind of be like Canada coming in and taking away everything from Washington State up until West Virginia, and only leaving New England and Georgia and the Carolinas for us. I mean, that's how much change has happened in just 40 years. And so this massive military powerhouse, Assyria, has come in. But this should not be news to Israel, because God has been announcing to them through his prophets that he was bringing destruction and judgment. He's been telling them, repent, turn away from these sins of yours, or I'm going to bring in Assyria, and they're going to wipe you off the face of the earth. I'm going to kick you out of the land because you have not been living up to the terms of the Mosaic Covenant. But they refused to hear. Starting all the way back with Moses, who warned them, if you don't keep this law, God will expel you from the land. They ignored that. And we have the period of the judges, where Israel is back and forth, worshiping idols. God would send them into the hand of an enemy, and then they would turn and repent for a few years or so. The whole period of judges, this back and forth, back and forth. Then we have, finally, the kingdom comes and David rules and Israel for a short while is stable and they're worshiping Jehovah and under Solomon. But then it was Solomon who starts bringing idols into Jerusalem because of the wives he married. And when the kingdom split under Rehoboam, the northern kingdom went off into idolatry and never recovered from it. The southern kingdom even hasn't been immune from all this. God has been warning his people for 600 years. How patient is God? 600 years he's been warning his people. Don't wander off after other gods. Return to me, the fountain of living waters, or I'll send you off into another land. And now it's happening. Any questions?